It's time again for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Good to be in studio with you here today. Well, we've got another exciting show for you today. Today's episode is Unlock Your Power of Childlike Thinking. And we have author, humor columnist, and entrepreneur Susan Sherbert with us. And she's going to be talking about her book, talking about her philosophy, a little humor, lots of stories. It's going to be a fun day. I'm looking at her rose-colored glasses sitting across the mic from me. So, hey, she's a believer in what she's saying. Well, look, I'm your host, Doug Gefeller. I've been a Master Certified Coach by the International Coach Federation since 1999, and I've been coaching business owners, senior executives, and their teams for 20 years here in Southern California, all under the banner of the coaching perspective. If you'd like to know more about my coaching services, just go to the website, www.thecoachingperspective.com, or you can reach me the old-fashioned way, 714-726-8354. Well, Susan, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Hey, it's a pleasure to have you here today, and thank you for working with our schedule. It's gotten kind of crazy since the beginning of the year.
Yeah, no, it's good. I'm glad to be here. I've been doing a lot of podcasts, and this is the first in radio interview in person, so that's good to be able to talk to somebody face-to-face.
Hey, we love to do firsts here. We love to do firsts, and I'm so fortunate that your friend and my new friend, Lisa Reed, got us introduced here. She's been a phenomenal person in terms of referring people to me for the radio show.
She's a big networker, and we think some of the same things. I took her seminars, and it really helped inspire some of the things in the book.
Well, wonderful. Well, look, let's just jump right in, get some of the basics out of the way. Tell us what you did before what you're doing now.
Well, kind of two things. I've written a book, and my first book was called Grown-Ups Don't Skip. That took me like 20 years to write. So I kind of have a parallel thing where my dream was sort of writing the book and helping adults have more fun and enjoy life and be creative and just kind of have fun. I always had the party house. And then to make money and progress, I ended up owning a printing shop. I worked there. The owner retired, and I bought him out. And it was funny because before I owned the business, I always said that I'm never going to make copies for a living, that I have a college degree, I'm not making copies for a living. And then the opportunity came where he says, I'm going to retire and buy me out. And so I ended up making copies for a living. And I always said I wouldn't. So.
Well, we never should say those never things.
You never know how it's going to turn out. So from a business point of view, I was at one point I had 6 employees, and it was a print shop. Now I'm kind of brokering from home and changed the technologies. I don't have to have a retail storefront, which is great because it gives me time to go on interviews and really pursue my books and my passion of helping others think like a kid and enjoy life and have fun.
Okay, so you moved from the print shop business into, and were you writing books while you had the print shop?
Yeah, and actually the funny thing was they almost started together at exactly the same time. It's just funny how paths cross. So when I was working at the print shop as an employee, I don't even know why, but I ended up writing a 28-page book about how to short sheet a bed. It's a practical joke where you can't get your feet in the bed. I don't know. I had some friends coming over, and it was like fun things for kids to do, and I ended up just writing this book. And because I worked at the print shop, I was able to format it and turn it into a book. And I ended up selling that book to Stroud's. It was a bedding and linen chain, and I sold 4,000 copies where if you bought the book, if you bought $50 worth of sheets, you got the book as a free gift with purchase. and that totally validated me as a writer because I wrote this book. They liked it. They thought it was a creative marketing idea, but they liked the book itself. They thought the book had a lot of depth and a lot of content, and that kind of made me a writer. And so I'm like, oh, wow, I really am a writer. Well, that was in that whole process was just about the time the owner retired, and I ended up becoming a print shop. So I had to kind of put my dreams in the back burner for a while to become a business owner and pursue it that way. But they really did almost start my writing career and my business career pretty much at the same time.
Okay, you know, we're 2 minutes into the show. I'm going off script already. You said that validated you. I'm always curious, as a writer, were you validated because somebody bought your book to publish it, or were you validated because readers bought your book or because you just finished a book. What was it that validated you?
I think it was the fact that they actually bought the book, because what happened was I wrote the book and somebody says, well, you know, you should sell it to Stroud's. And I'm like, I don't see it as a retail book. It was just a little 28-page booklet that I put together at the print shop. So I couldn't see it as a retail book. And so I thought, well, I've got a crazy idea. And I called up the marketing department at this thing and said, hey, I have crazy, who can I send a crazy idea to? And I got a number of somebody in this marketing department. So I put together a sales letter that said, here's ways you could use this book, including marketing it as a free gift with purchase. And all I did was put the one letter and the book in the mail, and I mailed it off. I didn't do anything else. And people in the business world says, you know, that never happens.
No.
You know, no follow-up letters, no follow-up phone calls. I didn't do anything. 2 weeks later, they called me up and said, we love the idea. We're going to go with it. So that validated that my timing was right, the idea was right, the creativity is right. It just means they enjoyed it. And so it's just sort of like, oh, well, if I can do it once, I can do it again. And that sort of started me on the writing career. And then when I bought the print shop, the next thing I did in the writing is I thought, well, I needed a newsletter, because back then every print shop, everything had a newsletter. But I thought, well, nobody wants to write about printing, because how boring is that? So I started a newsletter called Simply Amusing. It was a newsletter of absolutely no importance. And I wrote it, and it was kind of like a humor column, some just like, you know, funny things, and I put some corny jokes on it. And I put it out on the counter so that the customers could take it. Well, customers liked it. They thought the jokes were good. They thought the stories were fun. So next month I wrote it, and then I wrote it again. I wrote it every month for 12 years.
Oh, wow.
And that kind of became a lot of material I use in my blogs. I've got 52 corny joke books on Amazon. And so it just was one of these things where people enjoyed it. They liked it. If somebody picked up my work, read it, and says, oh, that's cute, I like it, or I enjoyed it, that was enough to get me to write the next episode. And then once you start writing it, then it becomes a habit, then it becomes easy, and then it's like you can't stop. You just have to keep going. But the initial, you know, starting it was people said, oh, I like it. That's kind of neat, kind of cute. And so I just kept it going.
You know, if you don't want to get into it yet, because I know you're going to talk about it at some point, but you mentioned that the fact that you sold a book validated you as a writer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You were telling me earlier before we went on the air about how you didn't feel like you were a business owner and what you had to do to validate your personal image as a business owner. Can you share that?
Yeah, you
with
want me to tell
audience?
That story?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. So one of the things of this transition is I worked at the print shop and I worked with all the employees, and then all of a sudden the owner retired and bought him out. And it was a very easy transition because he made it super simple, because he's like, look, I'm just retiring. I want to make it easy for you. You already know the customers. Let's just make it a very smooth transition. And so I'm a business owner. Well, I saw myself as the little girl behind the counter making copies, because that's where I came from. That's sort of where my other buddies, my other people I work with, we're all sort of on that level. And I really consider myself a girl behind the counter making copies. And it took a while to where I realized I needed to be an owner. I needed to take ownership of the business. I'm a business owner, but I didn't feel like it. And so I did a little bit of soul searching. I thought, well, what can I do to validate myself? And one day it just hit you. If you start thinking about something, your brain will give you an answer. It may not give you an answer immediately, but the answer will come to you. And I realized, you know what? I need to take up golf, because that's what business owners do. Business owners golf. So That day, I went out and I signed up for 5 lessons. I took 5 lessons. I learned to golf, and I realized I was okay with it. I'm pretty coordinated, and it was fun. It was great. And then somebody says, well, I want you to come play in a charity golf tournament. And it was like $250. I'm like, I can't take a day off work and pay all that money to play in a charity golf tournament. And I had to stop myself again and say, that's what the little girl behind the counter would say. A business owner would say, here's the money. I'm playing in a tournament, and let's do it. And so once again, it was that shift. I'm no longer the little girl. I'm a business owner, and a business owner would pay the money and take the day off and play in the charity golf tournament. And it was great. I had so much fun. I really enjoyed it. It was just awesome. So when the tournament came around next year, I called them up and said, like, I'd like to volunteer to help to play in your tournament. And at that point, the person said, well, the person running the tournament just quit, so can you run the whole tournament this year? So I ended up running the charity golf tournament. I realized a lot of the nonprofits that do charity golf tournaments would trade printing for golfing fees. So I ended up playing in a lot of charity golf tournaments, and I ended up building businesses with the nonprofit business businesses because of the printing and the trade and the golf. So it was kind of a win-win for everybody. And so I was almost there as a business owner, but still not quite. And then one day a friend said to me, hey, why don't you come golf with us on Tuesday morning? So I've got three people. We need a foursome. Come join us on Tuesday morning. And again, I'm like, I can't do that. I can't take a whole morning off to play golf. And I had to stop myself and say, well, why not? I'm the business owner. Of course I can. I had to allow myself to say, I can do that. So now Tuesday mornings is my golf day. We tee off at 6:30 in the morning. I can be at work by, 12, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. And I can schedule anything you want, but don't worry about my Tuesday mornings. I'll work evenings, as long as I get that Tuesday morning golf, it kind of keeps my sanity. It keeps my priorities. It adds a little bit of fun to the day. And it also made me a business owner. I had to take ownership of it because the little girl behind the counter wouldn't take a Tuesday morning off to play golf. But a business owner sure would. So the whole thing of that process helped me become a business owner, but there were so many little shifts along the way that I had to stop and say, that was the old way of thinking. That was the awareness that I was thinking like the little girl as opposed to the business owner. And so I took actions based on the awareness, which is what my whole second book is about, is being aware and then taking an action based on the awareness.
And really, I think those two stories, from what I've read in the portions of your book that I've read, haven't read the whole thing yet. I will.
That's okay.
I think those two stories kind of get to the heart of what you talk about, is about recognizing what's holding you back, recognizing what images you have of yourself that you want to change, or what images you don't have that you want to adopt. Is that
absolutely
fair?
Yeah. And the tagline of the, it's a white hat and rose colored glasses, and the rose colored glasses represent the clarity. You need to see what you need to see. It's that clarity, that awareness, that kind of the aha moment, saying, oh, I get it. That little tiny shift. That's sort of the rose-colored glasses awareness. And then the white hat is the action. You need to put on your good guy, white hat hero, and follow it up with good, solid actions. If you go back to the golf story, the awareness was, I feel like a little girl. I need to shift it. The action was, I signed up for 5 golf lessons. And it progressed from there. It was one bit of awareness followed up by some actions. And it changed. Clarity and action will change anything.
Okay. We'll talk about it at the end, but I don't want to wait that long. Tell the audience again the name of your book and how they can get it.
It's called A White Hat and Rose-Colored Glasses. It's available on Amazon. We did a big launch. It made number one on Amazon on the launch out, so it's a number one bestseller. And it's available on Amazon. It was published by Indigo River, a publishing company in Florida. It's my second book. You can find more information about both books on my website, which is called funhappyenjoy.com. And all of it's there. And there's a lot of free stuff, a lot of really good, insightful information.
Okay, great. We'll get back to some of that a little bit later. Coaching. You're not a coach.
No.
And you said you didn't want to be a coach, but you're attracted to coaches.
Well, once again, it's that awareness.
Yeah.
I love the coaching because the coaches help you shift your perspective. They help you see things differently. But to me, the coaches are more action. The purpose of a coach, at least in my perspective, is I'm going to help you implement whatever that shift that you need, all more action-based, to where I think I would love to partner with coaches to say, particularly clients that you have, they're not quite ready to be coached. They want to change their life. We talked earlier about transitioning out of, towards retirement.
Right.
And they have a mental shift, but they don't have quite that clarity yet. What I want to say is read this book and get that clarity, and then get the coach to coach you on all the action part. And so I really want to partner with coaches. In fact, when I wrote this second book, the target market was the coaches, so that I can coach his clients. I want your clients to be able to read this book and find the clarity, and then take the action by hiring a coach. I don't want to be a coach. I just want to help people find the clarity and then let them do what they need to do with it. But my strength, I think, is shifting that perspective, getting people to look at the book a different way. I've had a lot of people read the book, just like you. They didn't finish it because there's so much thought-provoking stuff in it that you read 2 or 3 stories, you have to stop and think about it and really kind of digest a lot of stuff that you're you're thinking about, because the stories are thought shifting. And so that's why I think it's just great for coaches to recommend to their clients.
Okay. Let me clarify for the audience. I don't want you to think I didn't finish this book, that it didn't hold my attention.
No.
Susan sent me a sample of the book. I read what she sent me. Now I'm intrigued to get the whole book, but I felt I needed to get it into my schedule and read it before she came on the air, so I had a better idea about it. And it, I think this is great, too. Also, for coaches out there, the fact that you have a tool that could assist them in their coaching, that could get their clients sort of prepped and aware, is a very interesting idea. I think from what little I've read, I think...
Well, let me tell you a story from my first book, and it's sort of what got everything started. The first book is called Grown Ups Don't Skip, and it's about how we as adults need to have fun and enjoy life. And it's really the basis for this. The second book is much more business-oriented, and the first book is just me trying to understand why adults don't have fun. What's the resistance? Why are they not enjoying life? It's sort of a my psychology background of saying, you know, why are you not playing my games? Why are you not having fun? And so the common thread of everything is learning to think like a child. And I use 4-year-old as my base. If you could learn to think with the freedom and the creativity and the passion of a 4-year-old, you could change your life. And it's not childish. It's childlike thinking, thinking with the purity of a child of age 4. And you could use any age. I just think that, 4 is sort of that pure. They haven't gone to school yet. They're not corrupt. They have that kind of pure, innocent you know, thinking.
Yeah.
So here's a story I always tell, and it's called The Story of the Scary Jelly Bean. And it summarizes the power of this childlike thinking. And so in the movie Harry Potter, they came up with jelly beans, every flavor, dirt, grass, sardines, literally every flavor jelly bean you can think of. And so I always like to do things and am fun and creative. And I found a box of these jelly beans. They sold them in the marketing. There was a whole box of jelly beans. And it was a Thanksgiving one year, and I had a whole group of adults sitting around at my table. And after the eat, you know, normally you'd go in the living room to watch TV, but I had a captive audience and I wanted to sort of entertain them and get them to do something. So I brought out these every flavor jelly beans, and I was putting them in a bowl. Now, as I put the jelly beans in the bowl, I couldn't tell the difference on the speckles between the Tutti Frutti and the vomit. You know, and the vomit was pretty gross. The Tutti Frutti was good, but the vomit was really gross. And they both went into the bowl. Now, if I'd handed that bowl to a little 4-year-old, because I use 4 as my ideal age, if I handed the bowl of jelly beans to a 4-year-old, they'd be excited to take one. They would hope that they get the Tutti Frutti. Yay, great, great. Even if they got the vomit. Oh, girl, look at this. I got it. It's almost exciting. You know, it's like they got the gross vomit one. They feel like they won the prize and it's a victory because, you know, oh, look at this. They got the worst one.
Right.
But you hand that bowl of jelly beans to adults, all of these full-grown adults sitting around my table, and the fear and the resistance of getting that one bad jelly bean, they don't want to play, they don't want to take one, they don't even want to try one jelly bean in the whole lot because they are afraid of getting the vomit jelly bean. And so the whole point of all my books and everything is when life hands you those flavorful bowl of opportunities, do you react like that excited little child? Or do you react like the fearful grown-up we've come to we've grown up to become? And that sort of sets the stage for all of my writing, is to learn to think with that creativity and fearless mindset of a little 4-year-old. And so that's, like I said, the first book is about having fun, enjoying life. And the second one, which is really, I think, targeted for coaches, is to help you simplify and just think with that purity of think. And we were all 4 once. We all had those thoughts. So what can we do to get back to that?
I need to find where I can get those jelly beans.
Yeah, they're called...
Are they still available?
Yeah, they are. I've seen them online, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
okay. Of course, online you can get them.
Yeah, you can get them online. And some of the... And I think down Balboa, some of the specialty stores have them and stuff. And the flavors are... Some of the flavors are really bad. I mean, the dirt tastes like dirt, and the sardines really taste like sardines, you know?
I love it. Well, look, before we get too far here, you know, I've asked every guest we've had on the show the same question. Never got a duplicate answer. What's your guiding principle? What sort of holds true north for you?
The holds true north is for me to help understand why adults don't embrace the fun in life. I know I think differently. My brain does not function like the rest of the world, and I think it's because it kind of never grew up. I still maintain that innocent, the rose-colored glasses. I see the world from, you know, the rose-colored glass point of view, and I don't understand why adults are so resistant and what's the problem and why they have to live in the negativity that they live in. So my guarding principle is to just help adults see things a little bit more positive, a little bit more enjoyable, and just shift things so that they can see a little more of the innocence that they had as and the freedom that they had as a child.
And while you're doing that for others, what's that doing for you?
Oh, it's fantastic. I had one woman that I talked to maybe about a year and a half ago. We met at one of my book events, and one of the questions I always ask is sort of, what do you do for fun? What do you do? And a lot of adults have a hard time enjoying that, answering that question about what they do. And she said, well, she'd always kind of like to do dancing, but she never took a dance class and stuff. And she was a photographer, and she enjoyed that, and she was thinking about making a business, but she wasn't charging for it. She was just, you know, taking pictures. Well, I saw her about 8 months later, and she came up to the event, and she says, you have really changed my life. She says, my husband and I are in a dance class, and I'm now charging for all of my photography. So she says, I want to thank you for that, because your little pep talk about, you know, finding something that you enjoy and doing it and motivating me to pursue my business, you know, made a difference. And that's all I need. It goes back to the newsletter. Somebody looks at the newsletter and says, oh, I like it. That's great. I'm very, very simple. You say, thank you. You say, hey, that's great. And that's all I need.
Last question before we go to our commercial break here. You on your bio, it lists you as a humor columnist.
Yeah, and that was the newsletter I wrote for the and then I also wrote a couple of columns for a couple of newspaper magazines. There were startup magazines in Orange County, and Orange County Women's Magazine, and Orange County Business Magazine. I was a humor columnist for those, and that was a little bit harder because I was trying to mix fun with business. And I think we talked earlier about fun and business are really difficult. You know, the businesses are so serious, and they don't see and understand the value of fun. So I'm writing a humor column that's insightful, but fun, and businesses were a little bit resistant because if it's too much fun, they don't take it serious.
Okay. Well, look, we're going to take a quick commercial break, sure. And then we'll be right back. And we're back from our break, and we've got Susan with us here. We've been talking about her book, A White Hat and Rose-Colored Glasses. Okay, a couple of things that you wanted to talk about. Awareness. How important is awareness? What are you getting at there, Susan?
To me, awareness is everything. I mean, you have to have that mental shift. You have to be able to see the things that you need to see, and that's these rose-colored glasses. And one of the reasons I talk about the rose-colored glasses is because so many adults see the negative side. And one of the things in this book I point out is that our brains are programmed to keep us safe. That's what they do. They can't help it. Our brains programmed to keep us safe. Therefore, we are always alert and aware for the negative side of things. We see something good. That's great. I like it, but it's not threatening and it's not super important. So I put the good stuff on the back burner, and I need to be aware and look out for all of the negative things in life, because the negative things are what really grab my attention. And so to me, the rose-colored glasses let you keep a well-balanced vision. You get to see there's a positive and a negative, and you get to keep it all in perspective, to where the negative is so sticky and so important that we just forget that there's a positive side as well. And so the awareness is, yeah, there's a lot of negative things that could happen, but you need to be aware that there's a lot of positive things that can happen too. Awareness is also entitled with the dreams and the imagination, where you have to be, you know, aware of the possibility. Just the possibility that something exists can change anything. I've got a lot of good stories in my book about just seeing the possibility. You know, you say, oh, can't do it, no, negative, can't be done, can't do this. And all of these negative reasons why it can't be done, just the awareness of one single tiny reason why maybe it might be able to be done is really, really, really powerful. but you need to be aware of the possibility and aware of the good things as well as the bad. I have a quote. I have a lot of good quotes in my book.
And oh, you have great quotes. I love your quotes. Are some of them your own? I mean, some you've attributed to somebody, and others, there's no attributions.
Right. Most of them are my own.
I love them.
And
great.
One of them is I changed the saying, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, and I changed that to the squeaky wheel gets replaced. You know, if it's squeaking and it's old and worn out, don't grease it. Don't give it the attention that it needs. Replace it. Start fresh. Start new. Just, you know, replace what isn't working rather than try and squirt it with grease to get it to shut up, you know.
Okay. Any tips that you give about how to increase our awareness in there?
A lot of it is imagination. I go back again to this little teeny tiny four-year-old. And I'm sure as a business world, you've heard of the 80-20 rule.
Yes, okay. Pareto's.
Right. So everybody knows, should know the 80-20 rule. 80% of your business or 80% of your stuff is controlled by 20% of the efforts, right?
Right.
Okay. So I like to look at that in the terms of the kind of the positive outlook and like your future and what you see. So like as a kid, 80 or 90% of what they see is the future, is the possibilities of things to yet to come, the dreams. Kids have this huge, huge visions of the future and they can see possibility in everything. 80, 90% of their thoughts and only maybe 20 or less is about the future about the past and things that they did. As adults, I think that's completely flipped to where 20 or maybe less is thought about the future, and 80 or 90% of what we think about is what we've done in the past or what we're going to do as our to-do lists, either the immediate now or the past, takes up 80, 90% of our thought processes. How can you have a dream and how can you change things if all of your mental energy and imagination is about the past? You have to think about the future. You have to have that dream. You have to have that spark. You have to have that what if, that possibility. So if you, even when you go to sleep at night, what did I think about today? How much time did I spend dreaming and thinking about the future? And if you don't have enough time on the far away, what you want out of life, what would you like to do, what are your dreams, what excites you, you need to shift that so you're getting a much higher percentage. As adults, we'll never make it 80%, but you need to shift to more percentage of your dreams. You know, what are you dreaming? Do you dream of anything? What would you like to do? What do you enjoy? What would you do if it was possible? Just that, again, go back to possibility.
Yeah. And, you know, it's not, it's hard for many of us, many especially business people, because we've been so ingrained into what is the expected, what is the highest probability of occurrences, what is the most likely path of success to follow, that when you ask people to dream, what are your dreams, they just kind of look at you, you know, that cow at the gate kind of look. What do I do now?
Exactly. And there's a difference between a dream and a goal. And I think businesses are very, very goal-oriented.
Oh, yeah.
But they aren't dream-oriented. And the difference is dreams, I mean, goals are very grown-up, adult, realistic, to where dreams are childish. Dreams are impossible. Dreams are things that are, that, you know, you can't, you don't know how or why, but you believe it's possible anyway. The dreams don't worry about the how and the why. The goals kind of get you there with the how and the why, but the dreams are what's the imagination and that creativity and, you know, that help you find what you want. I have another interesting thing in my book where I talk about, as kids, we had imagination all the time. Hand a child a stick and it's a dancing partner, a baton. It can be all kinds of things. You hand the adult a stick and it's, you know, a stick that they wipe their imaginary dirt in their hands and throw it away because it's, you know, it's a stick. And so as adults, in order for us to dream and imagine, we've created this thing called visualization, which means as an adult, I need to imagine my dreams. So I'm going to sit in a certain place in a certain way in a certain time with no distractions, and I'm going to visualize what I want. That visualization is a grown-up word for imagination. And kids, as kids at four, we had this imagination creativity all the time. But as adults, we've learned to train it to one little teeny tiny box when we choose to visualize. We don't. It's not spontaneous. It's not. It doesn't happen all the time. It's not that creative energy, which we really need for your dreams. It's the visualization, which is what the adults have, you know, put that imagination in that little box.
And, you know, my experience is you can't reach that creative imagining state if you are in the same place you are every day. You can't sit in the same chair. You can't sit in the same office. You need something different. And that's why you hear so many people, I think, or I hear so many people say, well, you know, I was in the shower and it just came to me. Or it was when I was on vacation, I suddenly got this idea for a new business or a new thing. They got out of the routine to where somehow their mind opened up because visually they were in a different place.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
there's probably a scientific connection there. I don't know it.
Yeah, but the shower thing, I heard something about that shifts the ions or something because there's some biological something with a shower. But no, you're right, and it's amazing what, because all it takes is one little spark. In the book, I talk about your seeds, and imagination starts with one teeny tiny spark, and that planted in the right spot, that little seed can grow into enormous things. But you have to be aware that it's there. You have to know that you have that spark. Okay, I'll do a quick story about my fairway of dreams, which goes back to the golf. And so I had read all the self-help books and everything, and everybody said, you need to have a big, bold dream. What's your big, bold dream? And I thought, one day it just came to me because I let my brain work on it, and one day it just, you know what? I'm going to golf every golf course in California. I thought, that's great, that's fun, that's exciting, and I'm excited about this dream. Whether it's possible or not, I don't know, it doesn't matter, I have this dream, and I think it's great. So I take this dream back to my golf buddies, who are my friends, but they're grown-up, realistic adult friends, and they immediately squash my dream like a bug. You can't do that, how are you going to get it on all those private courses? You can just, you know, you don't have the time, you don't have the money, and all these negative reasons why that dream was impossible. But the point was, it was my dream, and so I had to have the strength to say, I don't care what you say, I'm going to do it anyway. I went out and found a book, 864 courses. So that sort of is now sort of like that I use, the 864 courses. And I said, look, I'm going to do it whether you want to or not, because it's my dream and it's in that infant little tiny stage and I'm not going to let you squash it. And so it's my responsibility to keep it alive, to keep it growing. And then it's amazing what happens is because as soon as I decided to keep that dream alive, all of a sudden my friends started saying, gee, let's golf a different golf course this week so we can check one off your book. Or they'd say, who do I know that can get you onto some of those private clubs that are in your book? They become believers in your dream. But at first, they have to squash it. They have to tell you the realistic, all of the things that can go wrong, all that negative, because that rose-colored glasses, they don't see it. They see the negativity because they're trying to keep me safe and protect me, and they're my friends, and they're doing what grown-ups do, is tell me all the negative things. But it's up to me to keep my rose-colored glasses in place and strong and say, it's my dream, and I'm going to do it with or without you. And eventually they come along, and then it becomes a dream, and it grows, and who knows where it'll go from there. But it's that little spark, and it's your responsibility to not let somebody else squash it out.
I'm glad you explained that. Where you were going with the story to begin with, I thought we were going to have to stop playing with adults and just play with kids.
No, we need to think like a little. We need to be responsible adults, but we need to think with the mindset of a child. It's a big distinction. We need to act responsible, but we want to think with the simplicity and passion and courage and fearless thinking of a child.
Okay. Now, again, from what I read in your book, you had two major themes, clarity and actions.
Mm-hmm.
Want to explain those to the audience?
Yeah, the clarity is seeing what you need to see, you know, and it's...
And the imagination ties
into
that.
And the imagination, and your imagination, the image has to be so strong that it carries you through, because there's going to be problems, there's going to be obstacles, things are going to happen. My first book took me like 20 years, because I wrote it, I got a rejection, I got upset, you get the emotions, it goes in a book, you know, the book goes in a drawer, and it sits there, and then I bring it back out again when the time is ready, and then another rejection. It went on and on and on, and I had this dream to get this book, first book, going. I ended up self-publishing it because technology changed.
Yeah.
You know, I tried through traditional publishers. That didn't work. Time changes. Opportunities change. So self-published. I self-published the first book. And then I got another rejection that said, I really like the idea. It's just too fun. We just can't sell it. Because, you know, trying to self-fund a business just didn't work. So what I ended up doing was a mental shift, and it was an action. The mental shift was, rather than try and rewrite this book yet again, why don't I just start a second book? Why don't I create something new based on everything I've learned? So the second book is much, much stronger and better because I had 20 years of practice for the second book.
Yeah.
But the shift was, don't recreate it, start fresh and do something new. The second book, I took about 3 months.
Wow.
And I went back to the publisher that rejected it and said, you like the idea, but it was too fun. I wrote this book. I took a lot of the fun out. I did what you asked, but staying true to my beliefs, and here's the book. And he said, you're right. I like it. It's good. And that was when it got picked up by a publisher and everything else. So it's that mental shift with the action. Even if I go back to my short sheet in the bed book, when I had the idea of, oh, I could sell it to the linen companies, that was sort of the idea of the, or the thought. And then all of a sudden I made a phone call and I had the phone number of the person in the marketing department. I could have left it at that and just looked at the phone number and never did anything. The action was I typed the letter and put it in the mail. So it's sort of that, the clarity and awareness, the thought, the action, you know. Lisa Reed, we talked about earlier, she talks about thoughts, feelings, and actions.
Right.
And I go a lot in my book about the thoughts and feelings and actions, but I changed it to clarity and action because your thoughts and your feelings are conflicted and you may think one way, but you feel the other way. And there's a lot of stuff going on with thoughts and feelings. And if you can kind of get beyond that to find the clarity amongst your thoughts and feelings and then follow it up with the action. And so that's why I changed sort of that thoughts and feelings into more clarity.
Let's see, I'm thinking here about what else. Where else do we want to go with this?
I've got tons of stories. If you want me to tell you a couple stories. One of the stories, I start the book with three stories. And I don't want to tell the puffy yellow car because it's a good story.
It's my favorite story so far.
And that's how I open the book. Okay. And I want to leave that with that.
So everybody, you got to get the book to read the Puffy yellow car.
Yeah, and I won't tell you about that.
And especially if you've got children, it's going to crack you up.
Right. So I won't tell you about that. But I'll go to the third one about the story about the lime.
Okay.
And this sort of helps understand things. In fact, so the other day I was in the store, and the woman in front of me had just checked out, and the husband came up and says, "Oh, wait, hold on, honey, we need a lime." And so the woman said to me, and said to the checker, "Can I just pay for, you know, can I just pay for this lime, you know?" And I said, I looked at her and kind of waved at the checker, said, "Don't worry about it. I'll just put it on my bill. It's no problem. I'll cover it." And this woman, you could almost see the anxiety in this woman. And it was almost like the thought bubbles all in her head where she's like, I can't take money from a stranger. Why is she paying for this? And, you know, I don't understand what she's doing. And just so much adult anxiety and apprehension and emotions. And everything went into this one little gesture of me buying a lime. To me, I thought it was efficient. I thought it was kind. It was only, you know, 50 cents or whatever. It was not a big deal to me. Now, if I had bought the child a popsicle, the child would say, "Thanks, lady. Give me a big smile," and that would be it.
Yeah.
That would be done. There would be nothing required. But this woman with this sort of the guilt, the anxiety, even when she was leaving the store with her husband, she's like, "Oh, well, we'll have to pay it forward." It was a 50-cent lime. It should be, you know, no, I think one of the things I talk about, let a heartfelt thank you be enough, you know. And so in this book, I talk a lot about the fact that we as adults, we just put way, way, way too much stuff into things. And I also go back to where you're talking about sort of like I talk about people going on a first date and everything, or first time you meet somebody, you know, before you go into a door as an adult, am I dressed okay? What am I going to say? We go in with fears and apprehensions and all kinds of stuff to where a child, they just walk into the room, they have their play date, they play, and they go home. Nothing more. That's it. That's done. We as adults, you know, we go into a room, will this person be, we think about the future of this person, you know, if I marry them, what will happen? And we just bring so much stuff into it. Why can't you go enjoy it, whatever it is, think of the now, and then go home? If something comes out of it later, great. If it doesn't, fine. But it's just that whole thing of simplified, you know, it doesn't have to be that complicated.
And yet I don't hear you advocating that we live a simple life. I hear you advocating that we have a perspective shift of looking at possibilities and letting go of burdens.
Yeah, and one of the things
that we've created in our own mind.
Exactly. And one of the things I talk a lot about in my book about fears, and one of the things I say that people don't always really like is the fact that we have these wild imaginations, and our imagination is an incredibly powerful force for both the positive and the negative. We need that imagination for that dream to help us visualize what we're going to do. But if you have fears, a lot of those, well, almost all fear is imagination for the negative. And so we get all of these, we imagine what could go wrong, we imagine the negative, we imagine, and so the imagination, incredibly powerful, both positive and negative. And so when I talk about the fears, one of the things I have learned is, as a child, you sort of, well, let's go back to failure. There's a whole bunch of fears, but one of the fears, we'll talk about fear of failure.
Okay.
Because that's a big one in the businesses.
Sure.
And I don't totally understand the fear of failure, because to me, if you fail, you made a mistake. You tried. You took an action. It didn't work. It was a mistake. It was a boo-boo. You try again. You can lose and still win 2 out of 3, and you're the winner. So you can still lose and succeed. And so, to me, failure is not a really a big issue, because people fail all the time. I'm sure you've made mistakes. You can't go through life without making mistakes and failing. And the failures, you make the best judgment that you can with the information that you have at the time. But so many grown-ups attach rejection and attach all of these very, very harsh emotions with the failure. It, you know, I did something wrong. I am bad. I'm horrible. It was, you know, defeat. It was devastating. It was, you know, I'm rejected. No, you tried it. It didn't work. It should be that simple. You tried it based on all of the facts you had at the time. It didn't work. You try it again. You didn't fail. You weren't rejected. It just didn't work out. But as adults, we attach all of these emotions and all these things that really don't need to be there.
Well, you know, part of it is that the underlying concept in business is to not make mistakes. There is so much pressure on people to not make mistakes. If the employee makes a mistake, maybe once is okay. They make it again. But either way, there is the feeling in most businesses that if I make a mistake, I'm going to be criticized. It's to my detriment. Nobody's going to look at it and say, oh, Doug had another learning opportunity.
Right.
And now he's more experienced and more valuable to us. They don't look at it that way.
And to me, that's so crazy.
In baseball, on the other hand, we have a totally different thing. I miss the ball half the time at the plate. I've got a 500 average. I'm a hero.
Right,
nobody
exactly.
has a 500 average.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
But business doesn't accept that. Brain surgery, I'm okay with them not accepting it.
Exactly.
But general business, it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, and I think that it really restricts businesses in the fact that people don't try new things. You know, it puts so many restrictions to where, you know, you're not thinking outside the box. You're not thinking differently. If I'm going to be penalized for failure, then I'm not going to try. I'm going to play it safe. I'm going to stay in my comfort zone and not do anything new and different, and I'm not going to challenge anything. And so if you're stifling all the creativity because you've put that value on failure.
And it isn't just business. How many times as couples have we had the discussion about where we're going to go to dinner tonight? Does anybody ever suggest a new restaurant we've never been to? No, it's the same 4 places we've gone to all the time
right.
for the last umpteen years.
And I have a funny story in my book, and it kind of drives me crazy. Somebody says, are you hungry? I don't know. What do you want to eat? You know, are you hungry? I don't know. What do you mean? You don't know. You know whether you're hungry or not. And so there's sort of a lot of another fear I talk about, sort of the fear of the judgment. And, you know, somebody says, well, what do you want to eat? I don't know. You know, I actually would really like an ice cream, but I'm not going to admit to you that I want an ice cream for lunch, because you probably want salad and something healthy. So I say ice cream.
You had to say that. Okay, I had an ice cream for lunch
today. Good. And you should.
It was a drumstick.
Yes,
love
and you
drumsticks.
Should. That's it. If you want it, have it. You know, one of my quotes is that I talk about in my book is about permission is granted by you. We give our permission away so often because we're trying to make somebody feel better, or we're afraid of what other people think or everything else. You know, you think somebody's going to think less of you because you had an ice cream for lunch? No, if you want an ice cream for lunch, have the dang ice cream, be proud of it, and say, I had the ice cream for lunch. You know, yeah. Own it. And little teeny tiny things. The more of the smaller things you can own, the better you get at owning the bigger things.
Okay. Well, look, as we get close to wrapping up here, anything else that you didn't get a chance to say or share with the audience that you want to cover in our last few minutes
here? I think when we're talking about fears, I think I didn't, my two biggest fears are fear of failure and fear of change.
Okay.
And I think fear of change is also another really big one.
Yeah.
And once again, it's a golf story to where I was taking a golf lesson, and in so many things in life, almost everything in life we do, we get used to it. We get ingrained. It's sort of that emotional memory. Like you ride a bike and it's in your memory forever. You do a golf swing and that's how you learn to do a golf swing. So I'm taking a golf lesson and the instructor's having me change something. And I looked at him and I said, it just feels funny. And that became a whole blog and a whole section of my book. Change feels funny. You're going to be awkward. You're going to fail. It's not going to be right because your body isn't used to it. Your brain isn't used to it. It isn't wired to do things differently. And so if you can accept change as feeling uncomfortable and awkward and maybe even embarrassing, you can get through it so much better. I had a friend that had a new job and he was just training, and I knew he was really going to be successful, but he said at that point being new, he said it was very difficult. And I said, stick with it. It feels funny because it's new, because it's different, because it's awkward. So if you just acknowledge that change feels funny and stick with it, eventually change feels normal and it becomes the new normal and it becomes very comfortable and you get in the habit and then it's really, really easy. But at first, the change feels funny.
You know, we have such a difficult time with that. I wonder how the astronaut, I forgot his name, that just came back after setting the new record for being in space, I wonder how he was wired different than the rest of us, that he could climb in a capsule, go away for a year where everything was different.
Right, exactly.
Everything.
Right.
You know? And he must have loved dealing with change. Otherwise, he would have gone crazy in that period of time.
Yeah.
You know, why can't we look at this as our little space shuttle experience?
Yeah, good perspective. You know? I like that. Yeah. It's interesting. Yeah.
Okay. Susan, how do people get a hold of you? Let's give it one more time on the book and your website so they know.
I've got two books called, one is Grown Ups Don't Skip, and one is A White Hat and Rose Colored Glasses. They're both available on Amazon, both in Kindle and in print, hard copies. I've got a couple of the local bookstores that have the book in their bookstores, so you could get it in a bookstore if you wanted. Also, a lot of my stories and insights are on a website, which is Fun, Happy, enjoy.com. And if you want to sign up for my newsletter, I send it out about twice a month, and it's got an insightful lesson and always has got corny jokes.
Okay. And is there a particular golf course that one of our listeners can help you get on?
Nothing yet. Kind of,
okay.
You know, thank you for asking. I think that's great. You know, yeah. Local, I've kind of done okay with the Orange County, and now I'm more moving up into LA and San Diego.
Wonderful.
You know.
Well, look, thank you very much for being with us today. This has really been refreshing and exciting. I don't want to say I've had a childlike conversation, but I'm going to say that because you probably wouldn't take offense to that. Some of my other guests might think I wasn't being nice to them.
Very little offends me, and that's part of the childlike thinking is that I don't take it personally.
Great. Well, look, again, thank you for being with us. And,
great. Thank you. I enjoyed it. This is a great conversation.
You're working on your third book now? So,
yes, I am. Yeah.
As you get close, let me know, and you can come back, and we're going to talk about that.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Yeah. A lot of
thank you.
Great. Thank you
and
very much.
And welcome to the Coaching Perspective Radio community.
Great. Thank you.
Look, if you're listening to our podcast, then thank you for visiting our website, thecoachingperspective.com. Be sure to check out our archives for other shows with some other great guests. And speaking of guests, if you'd like to be on the show, we're always looking for people to interview, coaches, CEOs, HR professionals, authors. Hey, if you're interesting, if you've got something exciting to say that the rest of us could learn from and help us, then we'd like to have you on the show. Our guest next week is Serena Curran, an internationally known transformational expert, intuitive success coach, mentor, and speaker who specializes in working with professional women. Her topic is Step Into Your Power, Unlock Your Possibilities, Live Your Potential. So this is Doug Gefeller. I hope that you've enjoyed the show today and that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can put to use immediately to identify and achieve your goals. Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.